Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Glad to be here. We're here without Gary, and that's totally my fault because I forgot to tell him. Josh, I'm going to blame you. One of us should have told him that we're having a podcast today, but we'll get him in next time for sure. So anyway, it's me, and I've got a very special guest in today. DJ, all right, say it for me.
Yolito.
That's not how we've pronounced it for the past 20 years that I've known you.
Yeah, I've just kind of gone with Gelato, whatever people call me. I just, you know, give them a thumbs up.
Yeah, you're just happy that they're talking to you, and yeah, they're just, well, it's nice of you. Say it again. So everybody knows how to say it.
Yolito.
So is your brother does he correct people, or does he just, we just let it go?
I think we all just kind of let it go now. People say, well, what is that? You know, and I'm like, it's German. They say, no, it sounds Italian to me. And I'm like, yeah, it does to me too now that you say it. So Gelato it is.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, forever. How did Hagen pronounce it when you were playing for the Grizzlies?
You know, I don't even remember how he pronounced it. He just had a really good announcing voice, and I just remember him doing the DJ, and I was pumped by then.
And then just let it go. Okay. And then, yeah, that was fun, and then he always said the hometown boy, right? Didn't he say something like that with
you?
Yeah,
that was kind of my little nickname that they gave me before I got a penalty, before I, you know, announcing I scored a goal or had an assist. They always threw the hometown boy before it, so it kind of made me feel special.
Nice. Well, you've always been special. Some people say that sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's not a good thing. But for you, it's always been a good thing. So for those that don't know, DJ, you're a local boy, local kid, as we said, the hometown hero. And you are one of the few that were able to get out of here and play some pro and then actually play pro here and then go out again and play elsewhere. So I want to tell your story. I want to get to know, like, how did you get into hockey? And then I want to talk about your dad, because your dad was so much a part of hockey here, and then just such a welcoming person at the Acord. Like, your dad was always, you know, if you went to the rink and there was nobody there, you went. I'd always go around, and I know I'm not the only one, until we found your dad, just to say hi and talk, because he was just always such a presence here in hockey. So we'll talk about that. But tell me, when did you start playing hockey?
Started skating probably when I was 3. And my first organized team when I was 5. I was the first one in my family to play hockey. My father never played. He did serve a mission in Chicago, and he got kicked out of his mission because he was just going to Blackhawk games. And that's a true story.
That's so awesome.
He fell in love with hockey, left his mission, came back, and you know, got me started right away as soon as he, you know, had me. And then, yeah, rest is history with that. Kind of got the rink built in the backyard when the winters were cold, and I'd skate. And I kind of grew up not knowing much about the game in terms of where to advance, you know, in terms of juniors or college. I had no idea what that was.
Right.
So.
Well, that was the case with a lot of us here. I mean, we didn't even know what it was, let alone how to get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just were so new to everything. So you played house league, and then how do you get into, do you just advance to a travel team?
Yeah, so I was just playing travel team and house league, and eventually I hopped on with the University of Utah to play there. I got a full ride scholarship, like, academically.
Yeah.
And while I was playing there, I was practicing at the Acord where my dad was working, and Butch Ott's dad, Steve Ott, saw me practice because at that time, other way around. Steve Ott was playing for the Grizzlies,
right.
And his dad, Butch, was an agent. And he saw me practicing at the Acord, and, you know, he said, have you ever thought of playing in the OHL? And again, I had no idea what that was, and he had to explain it to me. But the Sarnia Sting, you know, had a spot for me if I wanted to go. So I cut my academic scholarship short and got on a plane to Sarnia.
Wow, I had no idea that that's how that happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, okay, as a parent, I would have a hard time with, okay, you've got a full ride to get your college degree, and now you're going to drop out of college, basically, give up that scholarship and go chase hockey, which hadn't been your avenue at that time. How was your dad at that time? Was he just pumped because he was a hockey fan, or was he
reserved? Yeah, they were a little nervous for me, but they were definitely, both my mom and dad were super pumped for me to go, and yeah, it was an eye-opener for sure going up to Sarnia. You know, coming from Utah, playing on house teams and travel teams and being one of the better players, and then going up to Sarnia and, you know, wearing the number 27, which was probably like the fourth backup goalie's number.
Right.
And playing on a fourth line and being scratched many games.
Yeah.
So I only lasted there probably a month before I got put on waivers and I got picked up by the Saginaw Spirit.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what started me to, you know, play at that level and kind of just grinded. So
what? So did you play high school here?
Yeah, I played for Hunter High School my senior year. That was their first organized team. But before that, we joined with Highland High and Riverton High joined an independent program. So right. We got to play against like a Utah County independent team. And anyway, my dad coached me for my senior year, and we kind of finally pulled Hunter High together to get their first team, which was my senior year.
Was your dad the coach?
He was the coach, yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
I had my brother on the team, and that year we lost in the semifinals to Roy, but the following 2 years after I left, my brother took the team to the state championship and won it 2 years in a row.
That's cool. So, yeah. It's just crazy to go from, to go to the OHL, most guys have to have played a ton of, you know, double A, triple A, whatever. And you're playing, you played some travel. You played Junior Grizzlies.
I played with, back in the day, I played with Team Utah and then the Utah Stars.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even think I played Junior Grizzlies.
Right, okay.
I think that was a little bit past my time. But, yeah, going to the OHL, yeah, it was just an eye-opener. The guys just knew how to snap the puck around a lot harder.
Yeah.
And at the time, well, I was just...
You're playing with draft picks and stuff at that point, right?
I was playing with a small two-piece stick, and all these guys had one-pieces, and it was just... There was so much that I didn't know.
Yeah.
But I had to learn quick. But, yeah, I played with, you know, guys like Chris Newberry and Tyler Hanchuk, Aaron Power, Michael Haley, who just played on the San Jose Sharks this cup run. There's a lot of guys. And when I got traded to the Spirit... You know, I was playing with guys like Paul Bissonnette and Peter Flash.
Yeah.
And, yeah, a lot of big names that kind of did a lot. And it's kind of cool to, you know, go back in the day and be like, wow, I did that. You know, it wasn't easy, but, you know,
yeah,
I did it. So
that's so crazy to me. I've known you forever, and I didn't know, like, I guess there was a blackout period for me because you went from – you know, the kid that I play summer league with to all of a sudden playing in the O. And I said, oh, well, I just assumed that you had played triple A somewhere else. Because, I mean, man, what a jump from Utah.
Yeah, from the University of Utah Utes to the Sarnia Sting in the OHL. That was my jump. So it was an eye-opener. It took a lot of learning and a lot of late-night bike rides up there to kind of get my feet on underneath myself and crack the lineup. And then the following year kind of got invited to go to Sault Ste. Marie and jumped in with the Greyhounds for their training camp. Shortly after that, sent me down to their junior A program, the Sioux Thunderbirds.
Okay.
And had a really good year there and finished third in the league in scoring. Following year went to Omaha in the USHL.
Oh, wow.
And played my overage junior year, so I was 20 at that time, with the Omaha Lancers, and then followed that with my first year pro with the Utah Grizzlies with Jason Christie.
Oh, wow.
Being
okay.
Coach, and that's where the pro started.
Who coached you at the University of Utah, do you remember?
Stan Weiss,
okay. Yeah. I was wondering who was there. And then, so, that's pretty impressive. I mean, that's a gut check, right? If you're... You go from the U, and now you're in the O, and now you've got to say, hey, I want to crack lineups. And even though you got sent, you got traded, or you got released, and then picked up, and then sent to junior A over those couple of years, mm-hmm. you decided at that point to put in the work, like you said, riding bikes or doing whatever. Because clearly, you probably weren't training to be a professional hockey player where you're at the U. Because, I mean, I played at the University of Utah, and we skated 3 times a week, and there was zero off-ice training.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't doing any type of hockey training that I should have been doing to get to that level. I just, I was just kind of rolling with the punches, and I got on the U. I was happy with it. And then the opportunity presented itself to go to Canada, and I jumped on it too. And so, yeah, my summers and my off-season workouts were hiking and going fishing. It wasn't the plyometrics and gym workouts that I needed to be doing. But I started doing that later on in my young 20s when I realized that's what I have to do in order to prepare for next season.
Yeah. So when you look back, do you remember how many games you played, like with Sarnia? How many games you got in?
I probably only got in like five to seven maybe. And then I played just over 20 with Saginaw. So over half of the games I was, you know, in the press box kind of watching the game.
Yeah.
But those guys are so good at that age. You know, those are all prospects that go into the show. So it was really interesting to watch from up above and watch how the game, you know, actually is supposed to move compared to playing house hockey.
Right.
You know, at our local rink.
We talk about that quite a bit on the show, and I had the talk with Mason Manick, who's playing in the Dub now, and I said, what was it like to go? Well, he played AAA first, and his coaches were Adam Foote and Joe Sakic.
Right.
And I'm like, what's it like to go from being coached here in Utah from Yahoo's like me and his dad, you know, that played at Weber, and, you know, we had a grasp of hockey, and then to go play for a master of hockey and to all of a sudden be expected to function in a system. So do you think the time in the press box helped you learn a system or helped you with the expectations of what a hockey player should be at that level?
Yeah, it definitely helped me see the game better. The part that really threw me off, though, was the fighting. I had never trained before to fight. I never knew how to fight on the ice. And so there's several instances, you know, in the OHL where I remember one of my first shifts, my first game with Sarnia, we played against Windsor in Windsor, and I lined up next to Cam Jansen.
Oh,
I was on the wing, and I was, you know, I was 6'3", maybe a buck 80, and this guy is just towering.
Yeah.
And he slashes me right across my skate laces, and he says, "You want to go?" And I kind of crapped my pants, and I didn't go him, but I did skate my 45 seconds out there, and I was kind of had my head on a swivel watching him
because
I knew he was going to kill me.
Right.
But this guy's, you know, a tough guy in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I remember him slashing me across the skate laces, and I was like, welcome to the league. This is okay. This is how it's going to be. Okay.
Well, no way. So, I mean, that's your first shift.
The first shift of my ever playing in the OHL.
Holy
and
crap.
It was, you know, 7 minutes into the first period when I got thrown out there on the fourth line. And yeah, that's who lines up next to me. And I, you know, maybe they're trying to be like, hey, go see who that guy is, you know?
Yeah. And obviously you don't know then that he's going to be a long time NHL fighter.
Right.
But how big was he? I mean, you're always big.
Yeah. I beefed up more when I learned how to work out and when I started progressing through the, you know, minor pro. But he was bigger than me at the time. He was probably a little bit shorter than me, but just super stocky.
Right.
You know, this kid has been training his whole life
for this. Yeah, because he wanted to be a hockey player and knew that that was an option for him, and you thought you were going to go to the U on an academic scholarship and you were getting better at catching bass.
Yeah. Trout fishing and stuff. I had no idea about the game of hockey, really. So...
When was your first fight? Did you fight in the O?
I don't know if I ever did fight in the O. I never squared off with anyone, if that's what you mean, because I did get in some scruffles near the net and stuff, you know, crashing the net and trying to do what I could to stay in the lineup. But again, fighting for me, I just kind of had to just kind of learn those first couple years because I didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I did get in some better fights when I got moved to the junior A team in Sault Ste. Marie and kind of learned how to grab a little bit better. But that was never my forte, you know. I always wanted to score instead.
Yeah. So when you were playing on these teams, did they tell you what your role was, or did they wait for you to figure out what your role was?
Yeah. I felt like they kind of waited for me to figure out my role, but I soon realized my role wasn't a goal scorer with some of these teams because there's – majority of those players, you know, already had days and months ahead of me in terms of skill and training. And so I needed to fall more in that rough and tough category.
Yeah.
It just took me a few years to kind of get my size underneath me and learn how to play a different style instead of a dipsy doodle that I could back home.
Right, because you're not gonna toe drag everybody in the O like you can around Utah, especially at the time.
Right.
But and then you're playing with Biz Nasty.
Yeah.
And so do you practice? Do you ever get a chance to practice fighting? Like during practices, does anybody help you with that? Because that's one of those things where that's a tough learning curve if you're not doing it in practice.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden just have to throw punches with somebody that's trying to knock you out. And that have been in, you know, a lot of those guys have been in 20, 30, 40 fights by the time they get to juniors.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Yeah. In Saginaw, I got to work with a few of the guys, but, you know, like Peter Flash, I think he plays over in Germany, and Paul Bissonnette. They definitely gave me some pointers here and there on what to do if I was to get in a scruffle. But, you know, we had our tough guys on those teams, so really it was avoided for me. Like, I wasn't expected to fight.
Okay.
But after that season, kind of, I wouldn't back down if I was asked, because I would be confident in knowing that, you know, I can get through this. And you kind of just figure it out along the ways that, you know, sometimes I'm just going to have to drop the mitts and see what happens.
Right.
So
just go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. I had a couple fights in juniors, which goalies don't normally. I still am missing teeth from it, but I remember literally the next day after my first fight asking, so what happened? I had no clue, 'cause I got hit hard.
Yeah.
It turns out I'm not a good fighter. So it turns out that I should just stay in the net and let other people fight for me. But like I lost that whole day.
Right.
Of my first fight. I don't remember the lead up. I don't remember what happened. I don't remember how I ended up in a fight. And all I remember is waking up the next day in some town in Canada, just being like, where am I? And how did I, like, my mind just starts from that day. I lost. It, that's just the weirdest thing. And like I said, that's a sharp learning curve.
Yeah.
If you're fighting guys that know how to fight and know how to handle somebody.
Yeah, it wasn't my area of expertise, that's for sure. But when I was playing with my first year with the, or second year with the Grizzlies, I lived with two of the fighters, Brandon Tidbull and Brad Haroff.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they definitely can give good pointers, and they were two of the best, you know, in the ECHL. Brad was a smaller guy.
Yeah, he was little.
But he would take on anyone.
Yeah.
And then Tidbull, you know, more of a heavyweight.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of felt protected because I had those two on my side, especially, yeah, you know, underneath the same roof, too.
Yeah. I remember Brad getting in a fight. I don't know if you were there that year, but we had a fight in practice.
Mm-hmm.
He's fighting our own guys.
Like, yeah.
He just, yeah, you're right. He wouldn't back down to anybody, including guys on his own team.
Yeah. Yeah, and that happens, but I think it's healthy sometimes, you know. I know this season with the St. Louis Blues, I know they had fights early on in their
season. Right. That's true.
And then look what happened. So it's not always a bad thing.
Right. I remember that video. There was a video circulating of some fights that was not supposed to get around.
Right.
So you play your juniors and you finish that off. And then you already mentioned that you sign with the Utah Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that come about? Did you reach out to Christy or did somebody reach out to you?
I don't remember exactly how that whole thing came about. But yeah, Jason Christie was the coach. Chuck Weber was the assistant coach at the time. And I cracked the lineup. I remember one of the news stations being at the Acord recording training camp and did a little segment on me. And, you know, I was a rookie, so I caught a lot of heat. I got shaving cream during the interview.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I kind of got it all, shaving cream in the shoes or just all types of stuff. Those guys were hecklers. But, I did enough to crack the lineup and kind of played, you know, a fourth line, third line type guy. Sometimes I'd shift into a second PP unit, you know, when the opportunity presented itself. But Knaswich was on the team, which he's now the assistant coach with the Grizzlies. And so, yeah, definitely learned a lot my first year pro, which led into my second year pro with the Grizzlies. And, yeah, from there I kind of started taking off, and I really felt like I got my feet underneath me, started my body mass index started kind of leveling out. I wasn't such a beanpole anymore.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, that makes sense because I don't know how to phrase this properly or whatever, but basically you went from the U and you had a couple of years of juniors to kind of start figuring things out where all these other guys, you know, I'll put it in my terms. When I first got to a junior A team and somebody said, you know what, you've got a lot of potential, but how many games have you played in mm-hmm. your life? How many games have you played? And I'm like, I can tell you exactly how many games I've played because I played for Murray High.
Right.
So when my first year, my sophomore and junior year, I did end up getting a couple months at Shattuck St. Mary's. But besides that, I mean, I played 40 games total in 3.5 years of hockey
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And then now all of a sudden, same thing. I'm at a junior A camp and they're like, hey, you could make this team, but these guys have played 40 games last season. These guys played 60 games last season. You don't even have that in the entire time you've been playing hockey. So you've got to, there's that point where you've got to kind of grow into the game. You've got to, and then I had never done weight training. I had never, like, we didn't have that at Murray High.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the football team did, but the hockey team's a club. So again, we practiced one day a week and had one game maybe a week or every other week, right?
Yeah.
And you were in that same boat. And here you are playing with the big boys. You're playing with draft picks. You're playing, and you've got to catch up.
So quickly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I went in at my draft year, 18 years old, you know. So when I went into Sarnia, all these kids are getting ready for draft.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what draft was, to be honest with you. I had no clue. And it was my essential draft year, too. But I didn't go to the draft or anything like that. I was never drafted. But yeah, those kids had been playing 3 years of juniors before that, you know, 15, 16 years old. So they already had a couple hundred games under their belt where I'm coming in, you know.
Yeah, same
thing. Playing with the Utah Stars, but, you know, we'd go to Sun Valley or Jackson Hole or Salmon, Idaho.
Yeah.
Playing on some outdoor rink, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to get fishing in between games.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So it definitely was like, man, I need to learn a lot about this.
But so that makes sense that now second year Utah Grizzlies, your first year you did decent, right? Like you earned your spot on the team. You're not there as a media ploy or anything like that. You're not there just because you're a local guy. You're there because you earned a spot there.
Mm-hmm.
But that second year you really started to blossom and become more of a leader. I've got your numbers right here. So first year you played 48 games. And then you had 7 goals, 6 assists, 13 points, 25 PIMs. And then your second year, you played 70 games
mm-hmm.
and had 29 points and 70 PIMs.
Right.
So you start, I mean, you really start being more of a producer for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, the second year, we struggled more than the first year. So, yeah, I did get the opportunity to play a little bit more, and I got to play power play a little bit more. I got to play with some good line mates, too. And then, yeah, my penalty minutes increased, too. So I was more in the mix of things, you know, gotten a few fights and was able to really understand the game a little bit more. And then going into my third season with the Grizzlies, they had just changed affiliation, so they had some draft picks coming down, get sent down, and I kind of got bumped out of the mix there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jason Christie just told me he's going to probably be releasing me, but my roommate at the time, Brad Haroff, said, you know, I have a sweet place in Oklahoma City that they would love to have you, you know. And it was between Oklahoma City and the Mississippi River Kings, and McClelland was the coach at the time with Mississippi and Doug Sauter in Oklahoma. And I was actually on I-80 driving to that direction. Still hadn't decided a team, but I had my bag packed in my truck. And, you know, I had about a couple hours before the exit to Oklahoma or stay straight towards Mississippi. And I was on the phone with anyone close to me that I knew, trying to get their opinion. Where should I go? Where should I go? And, you know, it wasn't really about the money. I didn't know what's better, Mississippi, Oklahoma, who's going to be better.
Right.
And kind of my roommate at the time, Brad Haroff, said, oh, you'll love Oklahoma. go to Oklahoma. And I was like, all right. And so it was, you know, 10 minutes before the exit. And I was like, all right.
So what's the deciding factor? Just Brad? Brad's little...
Well, just the way I just turned the truck. I just decided to turn right. As soon as I turned right, I think I called McClelland and told him I'm not going to be coming to Mississippi this year. And, you know, he was bummed, but understood. And then called Oklahoma and said, you know, I'll be there in 4 hours.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a crazy ordeal on I-80. Hadn't decided, but definitely knew I was going to play one of those places.
Yeah, I just kind of remember, because, I mean, obviously, I got a ton of games those 2 years as the E-Bog that you were there. Because mm-hmm. Jason was one of those guys that was, he was a budget guy, right? So yeah. He's the first one I ever learned the trick that I can't remember, somebody got hurt, one of the goalies got hurt or he got pulled up or whatever, so he brought me in. And he's just like, hey, we're going to need you for 2 straight weeks. Are you cool with that? And I'm like, yeah, I'll make that work. So I was there every day for 2 weeks, all the games, all the practices. And I didn't know until the end of the 2 weeks that he would add me on game day and then delete me the next morning. And then I'd practice every day. And then so when my paycheck got there, because I got paid $45 or whatever for being there for one game.
Yeah.
Instead of getting the $450 or whatever you're supposed to get, right? I'm right. Like, oh, man, that was a shrewd trick.
Yeah.
Had no idea that was happening. But at the time, I don't care. And then I ended up staying, I don't know if you remember, I was there like 14 straight games.
Right.
And that's when I learned how shrewd Christy was with the budget. And so he would just leave me there because I was cheap and free. A lot of times free, right?
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of talk when you left the team that it was, I don't know, there was a lot of locals and, you know, I talked to a lot of the Grizzlies season ticket holders or whatever, but man, when you left the team, they wanted Christie's head.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just thought it was a budget move. A lot of people thought it was whatever. We kind of, in the locker room, we knew it was because of the affiliation, because we went from, where were we with the Islanders, and then we went to
Dallas or I can't remember.
Calgary, I thought.
Calgary, yeah.
I don't remember. I just remember at that time we switched and they sent more players.
Yeah, there was a ton of players in camp, and some players would get cut, and then a new wave of players would come, and I started thinking to myself, man, every day on that whiteboard they'd write the lines, and I started high and I started dropping down to the second and to the third and then to the fourth, and then before you know it, you know, you're just like on this red shirt line where you kind of fill in.
Yeah.
And then, the writing was on the wall pretty soon.
But that wasn't because of your play. That was because of demands basically from the parent club saying these guys need to get minutes.
You know, teams have invested money in them and they needed to get minutes. They needed to get better. And, you know, with me not being drafted and, you know, not part of a certain organization, it was easy to just kind of sweep me out the door.
Yeah. But man, I've been with the organization. So this for 19 years, my 20th year is coming up where I've e-bugged for this team. And I've been in that locker room for a lot of guys coming through, and the fan favorites, Travis Rycroft.
Right.
Did you play? He was here then. Ryan Kanasiewicz, without a doubt. Greg Lieb was up there, but Rycroft, Kanasiewicz, and then I'm going to have to say you. So again, there was a huge like sonic boom when you left that team.
Right.
That I remember people just saying, "Oh, I'm not even going to buy season tickets anymore." Did you know that stuff happened?
I didn't know that. I know some people were bummed out. Obviously, friends and family of mine were super bummed. But you know, I just kind of took it as it's a learning curve. I'm going to go play elsewhere and do the best for myself. And I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit later, but I had an opportunity to come back for one final year.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, you know, those leagues like the ECHL, they go through guys so quickly, and it's all due to their, you know, their drafts and their, you know, the budget and everything. I mean, if you look at the team each year, there's a whole new,
right,
whole new faces.
So. 4 or 5 guys stay. And that's the thing with even this year. We're second year with the Avalanche, I think. And people are losing their minds because all 3 goalies from last year are gone. And you just keep a nucleus. You know, like, you just keep certain... It's just hard in the East Coast League to keep a whole team together. And a lot of fans don't understand that part, but a lot of them do. Well, there are some knowledgeable fans here now.
Yeah.
I want to talk about a little bit about how is it being the hometown guy as far as how many friends came out of the woodworks and, like, what were your ticket requests like? Was it ridiculous?
No, it actually wasn't too bad. There was actually a lot of my friends and stuff that would just come to the games and purchase tickets.
Yeah.
They didn't want to bother me, so they just came to the games. But they were crazies for sure. They would be down at the glass pounding on it and shirts off and everything.
That's awesome.
So, no, I had a really good fan base. All my friends stayed pretty true. There was none that kind of just tried to be my friend now that I was on the Grizzlies and stuff. So it was kind of nice to have some true friends like that and some that, you know, would just pay for the ticket and pay for parking and not hassle me hours before the game.
It's like the same price as going to a movie.
Right.
You know what? It blows me away how many people were like, hey, I need a ticket. Can you get me 10 tickets?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's $5 or it's $8. It's $10.
Yeah.
Like, you'll pay to go to a movie, but you won't come to, like, this is way more fun.
Yeah. Some wanted the free tickets, but then they'd buy 5 to 10 beers there. So it's like, how does it, how does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess, yeah. And that's what one of the things, like, every once in a while, I'll hit Youngman up and I'll be like, hey, Youngman, I got a buddy that wants to bring his family. And I'll be like, I'm guaranteeing that if you give me 5 tickets, that they'll drop a couple $100 on beer and food and snacks or whatever. But so sometimes we balance it out.
And the Maverick Center is so nice too. I mean, you can kind of sit wherever you want. You know, the ushers are really good about letting you sit somewhere as long as it's not taken by someone. So
right, buy the upper bowl seat, go sit lower bowl.
Right, yeah.
We didn't just say that. We're not. So don't call me Youngman. I know that we're not plugging that, but it can happen.
Yeah.
So tell me about you arrive in Oklahoma. And what's that like? Now were you happy that you were there, or did you start going, oh, I wonder if Mississippi would have been better?
No, I was super happy. They played out of a really nice arena called the Ford Center.
Yeah.
The Seattle Supersonics. They ended up getting moved to Oklahoma for the Oklahoma Thunder. Anyway, they shared the same building, so the basketball team actually played out of there for a bit. And so super nice facility, super nice locker room, you know, cowboy country. The coach had big handlebars. His name's Doug Sauter. Lives on a ranch with Clydesdales and everything.
Nice.
Great group of guys there, too. Definitely met some longtime friends. Central League, ECHL. I would say, you know, some of the top Central League teams are very comparable to the East Coast League teams.
Yeah, definitely then, for sure.
So It was great. Definitely got my minutes in me there. Played, you know, first line and got first power play. Definitely logged in a lot of minutes and did really well. Had 2 25 goal seasons and was able to make a name for myself in that league and, you know, just kind of opened up the doors to do more after that.
So. Right. I remember jumping, I can't remember if it was online or somehow, but I got to watch like your first couple games there on TV, and I just remember those uniforms were just crazy. Like what was it, the Ottawa 76ers that wore the red, the vertical stripes.
Right.
Or no, the horizontal stripes.
Yeah.
And you guys were just decked out. I mean, those were crazy.
Yeah, they had a great fan base there too. The Blazer community is really tight and stuff, and I still talk to a lot of them, you know, through social media and and stuff. The Blazer fan base, they take care of you so well too. I probably would have stayed there a lot longer if after the second year they ended up folding. So they, you know, just stopped completely, didn't have a team anymore, and so I had to make a move. I had to go somewhere. I wasn't coming back home, so Alfie Michaud, who played with the Grizzlies, the goalie.
Yeah, I remember Alfie.
Yeah, he was the one that said, you know, Yulito, isn't that German? And I was like, well, most people think it's Italian, but sure. But he said, you know, you should try and go play in Germany. And again, I was like, what? You know, hockey in Germany? What are you talking about? You know, so he kind of gave me the rundown that I should get my dual passport.
Yeah.
Go play over in Germany. And he had a friend over there, Craig Strew, who was a coach that wanted me on the team. And yeah, went to the LA consulate and got my German pass, took in, you know, birth certificates and death certificates and got my German pass. And next year I was on a plane to Germany.
So you're a dual citizen now for Germany?
Yeah, so I have a German passport and American passport. So
What in your heritage, how far back does it have to go for you to be a dual citizen?
I think just your grandparents have to be full of something. So my grandparents were full of German.
My grandparents are full of something, but that's crazy. Yeah. I didn't know that you had done that. So your grandparents are German, so now you're...
My dad's parents are both from Germany.
Okay.
And then they moved over here, and so that made my dad 50% or 100% German. And so it makes me 50% German, and I guess that's enough to get your pass.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was kind of weird because anytime I'd fly... If I'd fly to Germany, I would just use my German pass so I can, you know, don't have to go through the non-import line.
Right.
That takes forever. And then coming back, I'd just use my American pass. And then when I was over there just traveling to different countries, I'd usually use my German pass because it's just easier to get in and out of places.
Right.
Going to like Africa and Turkey and all those places, if you showed your American pass, you gotten a little scuffle sometimes.
Right. Nobody loves Americans anymore. Man, that's... So you're in Hanover.
Yep.
And, man, I didn't know the citizenship part. I'm just blown away by that. That's so cool. And for some people may not know, but there's an import limit on these teams. And mm-hmm. Now you're not an import. Now you're naturalized or local or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
So you don't count against their imports because typically a lot of these teams would be... What was the import rule there?
We had six.
Okay.
So six imports. You know, you'd be from Russia, Canada, America. It doesn't matter. You could have six per team. And the rest were, you know, you had to be German.
Yeah.
So I counted as a German, even though I didn't know how to speak German.
Yeah.
I had no clue what Germany was like. So some fans definitely gave me grief for that.
I bet.
DJ stands for Dirk Joachim. That's my real name. And that's such a German name, you know.
Yeah.
And so they were saying, your name's Dirk and you don't know how to speak German. And I was like, nine.
You'll show them, you'll say nine.
Yeah.
All right. And it's funny because, you know, Andy Murray, the coach, that he coached the LA Kings, and I think he's coaching Michigan State or Western Michigan or whatever. His son, Brady Murray, played at North Dakota. And I think Andy had married a Swede. So anyway, Brady's mom was Swedish, and he was drafted by the LA Kings, and it wasn't working out for him. And then all of a sudden, he was a Swede, and he went over and same thing. He played like 10 years in Sweden as a Swede and made, you know, tons of money over there. They were paying a ton at the time. But
yeah,
I just thought, man, you played for Team USA. Like, he played in the World Juniors for Team USA, and he was American right up until he ran out of options in America, and then all of a sudden you get to switch passports.
Right.
Because of that heritage, and that's good. That's a good way to make the money.
Yeah. No, it was...
Keep chasing the game.
That was definitely my most interesting experience over there, living in a foreign country, you know, not knowing the language, but also being a citizen, so... I remember going to they provided you with a brand new car too. So you go to the dealership and all their cars are manual. I had never driven a manual in my life.
And you got to drive with your left hand, and, right? Is it on
No, Germany's the normal way or what we're used to.
Shows what I know. Yeah.
But I didn't know how to drive a manual, and they have these cars lined up and the license plate's like a personalized plate with your number on it and stuff.
Oh no.
So I hop in my car and, you know, there's six or seven teammates ahead of me that start going, and I don't know how to drive a manual. I've never driven a manual. And so that car's just going, no, back and forth, back and forth. And I can see the people at the car dealership looking at me like,
starting to cringe.
Oh boy. I mustered my way out of there and got to the gas station. Again, just me just not knowing, like, got out of the car to fill up, car starts rolling because I didn't slam it. Slam the e-brake on it. So I went and pinned my back foot behind the tire.
Oh, man.
And just like holding it. Yeah. And had to run back in and slam on the e-brake. I mean, that's just one of many stories that I had trying to like, oh, man, where am I and how do I get through this?
That's crazy that you didn't know how to drive a stick. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of kids don't now.
Yeah.
If you haven't been. So I've told this story before, and I don't think I've told it on the show. But it's just what you're exposed to, right? So
yeah.
In the fire department, one time I got put into, I became a day worker. I was the public information officer for the fire department. And with that comes a vehicle. And, of course, with government work, you get the, like, AM, FM radio, roll down window, like, you know, nothing's manual on it. So I picked my son up from school, and he's like, ah, he's wanting to roll down the window. And I'm like, okay, just roll it down. And he's looking for the button. And I'm like, no, you roll it down. I don't know how to explain it different. Just roll it. And so he grabs the handle. He's trying to push the handle like it's a button. And then he grabs the knob on the roll-down thing and just starts rolling the knob because he thinks that's going to roll it down. I'm like, all right, this makes sense. He's never seen how to roll down a window before. It's always been push button. So I had to, but it's the same thing, man. If you've never seen a manual, then you've never driven a manual. You've got
to
be taught.
Yeah, over there, they just have so many things to where you just got to live and learn. I mean, going into the grocery store, they don't bag your groceries. So you go through this little supermarket, and it's – these grocery stores are tiny, you know, and their fridges are tiny over there. You kind of buy for the week. You don't buy for months.
Yeah, I go buy daily.
So it was my first time. I needed a bunch of staple items. So I had a big basket full of stuff, and I put it on the little conveyor belt thing. And she started checking it out, and I didn't say a word to her because I didn't know what to say. And then she just... it just kept piling up on the other side. I was expecting someone to bag it for me, and people are waiting behind me and, you know, shunning me in German. And yeah. I had no idea. I started panicking. So I kind of just gave the lady my American money that she gladly accepted. And I started throwing all the groceries in my shirt. And I just ran them out to my car and ran back in and loaded more in my shirt. I mean, just so many things like that where I had to –
yeah.
Learn, like, okay, next time I need to bring my hockey bag in or something.
Trial by fire. That's crazy. So how did – it's a different game there too, right? You were a mucker a little bit here. You're picking up – what do you got, 70 – you're averaging 70 minutes in penalties a year.
Yeah.
In the U.S. And now you're in Germany where they don't really hit as much.
Right.
It's a finesse game over there.
It's a finesse game. It's bigger ice surface, you know, Olympic-sized ice. So you have more room to work. And so, yeah, the skill level's definitely up there with their dynamics and stuff. But I did get suspended a few times because I would hit. Or it would be – I would get a penalty for hitting too hard. And that's what they would say.
What?
Yeah. So I did get some suspensions and you know, I did have to miss a few games here and there, and it was due to hitting too hard.
Just a clean hit, but too hard.
A clean hit, but too hard, because some kids just didn't expect it, you know? But back with the Grizzlies.
Was that kind of fun, though, to line up a guy that was just down trying to toe drag you, and you just dig your shoulder into him?
Yeah, it was pretty fun. You know, the fans didn't even like it. I mean, not even your hometown.
Really?
Not even your hometown fans liked it. They didn't really like the physicality of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I have to shift my game back to more of a dipsy doodle type way.
Yeah.
And so the toe drags and the heel drags and everything else is more common over there. You know, doing that over here, you just, you get ran over.
You're going to eat somebody's shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Evan Stofflet showed, I've got this picture. It shows up. I have a video screen that just shows all these different pictures I've taken over the years or had or whatever at my house. And every once in a while, this picture will show up of Evan, and I want to say he was playing in, I can't even remember, Germany, or it wasn't Scotland yet. But anyway, he's over in Europe, and something happens in front of the net, and he grabs a guy by the face and pushes him down on the ice. And I think he gets suspended for it, and that picture made the paper. Because now they're like, what a goon.
Right.
His hometown.
Yeah.
Or the town that he's playing for is just basically mad at Evan. And Evan's like, that's... That's like 90% of the plays as the defenseman in the U.S. Like, somebody gets it in your goalie's face, you grab them by the face and throw them on the ice. Like,
yeah,
that's just how it is. And now he's sitting in the stands suspended, and his own fans are kind of booing him a little bit for being too aggressive.
Yeah. So, yeah, your own fans would, if you were a little too aggressive, they would boo you, or they'd talk to you after the game, like, why did you do that? And I was like, do what? Like, yeah. That was a clean check, man. That kid had his head down.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes the kid wouldn't get up, and that's kind of when it was, like, yeah. I didn't mean to hurt you. It's just, you know, you had your head down, and you were coming right through the slot, so.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Maybe German on my passport, but I still play North American hockey.
Yeah. And that a lot of teams looked for the dual citizens over there because you kind of, you know, you had that extra import, but you could claim them as a German and stuff. So I'm not sure the amount of years, but a lot of players ended up living over there for a certain amount of time, because if you lived over there a certain amount of time, you would end up getting your German pass.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that there's still some friends of mine over there from Canada that still live there.
Yep.
Kind of just fell in love with it, and now they're more German than they are Canadian. So.
Yeah, I've got the same thing with a couple goalies that I know that they played for the Grizzlies or whatever, and then ended up over there, and then ended up just loving it there or marrying a girl there, and then it added 5 years to their hockey career that they would have normally had because they became citizens, and then they never came back.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, marry. Well, and that's our trap too here, right? We get guys that come to Utah, marry a Utah girl, and then they just stay here and play hockey. So that's interesting. Did that help you with your game, though? Like, playing in Germany, now you're a way better stick handler and you have better moves because you played in that league?
Yeah, it definitely helped out my skating and my stick handling ability and stuff. That was more of my strong suit, was my puck handling ability and shooting. But it definitely helped my skating, because you had to move your feet a lot more and get up and down the ice quicker. It's just more surface to cover. So that definitely helped on that side of things. But after, you know, it was crazy because Hanover and the league in Germany, you play half the games that you do with the Grizzlies or Oklahoma City. I think you only play like 35 games in a season.
Yeah.
So you play like on a Friday and a Sunday. You can count on that every week. And so a lot of the practices through the week are just flow drills, you know, tape-to-tape passes, a lot of power play work, and, you know, a lot of time off to go to their saunas and steam rooms and kind of – They're big about relaxing over there. There's not a rat race.
Yeah, that sounds way better. And at this time, you've been banged up from the OHL and the East Coast League and the Central League. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have things that this is just helping, like nagging little injuries that you've never really been able to recover from. And now you're in Germany where you don't hit a lot and you get to hit the sauna.
Yeah. Yeah, I went over there kind of a little banged up, so I was able to recoup a bit. And definitely the game, like, toned down in terms of the physicality. So I could see myself staying over there for, you know, a solid decade if things, like, worked out. And I had some offers to go to the DEL. I just knew if I went to the DEL, I wasn't going to play as much. And I wanted to play. That was my big thing. So I stuck in the second league because I knew I was going to, you know, put up some good numbers. I was going to play on the first line, you know, get all the PP time. And the fan base over there is just crazy. Like, they sell out every game, and everyone comes in with jerseys on, and, you know,
they're singing,
chanting, fire in the stands. It was just really cool to play in front of that. And I wanted to play in front of that. I didn't want to play for a team where I was in and out of the lineup.
Right. What is the money a lot better in the DEL than it is in the second league?
It's actually not, unless you're a top, you know, six forward or top four D, but, you know, because I had some offers in the DEL, but they were actually less than what I would have got paid in the second league.
Really?
So it was another reason I chose to stay in the second league.
I didn't know that. I honestly don't know. I only know from a few guys. I know goalies that would go over there and make more money than they would have if they would have stayed here and played in the NHL.
Yeah, I know.
As a second guy.
In the DEL, there's, you know, some of their top imports are making a considerable amount of money.
Yeah.
But then they have, you know, 19 and 20-year-old guys that kind of fill out the rest of the roster in the fourth line positions and stuff. And I know they were making, like, less than $20,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
And So
you've got guys making $500,000-$600,000 guys, and you got $20,000 guys?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah. So.
I know it's that way now. I just didn't know it was that way then. Like, the money got a lot tighter since the NHL changed.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the money in Europe got less and less. But
yeah, it wasn't. And then the only reason I left Hanover was because the fourth year they ended up going through a bankruptcy.
Oh.
And so that's kind of what got me. Had to shift out of there again. But
and where did you go after that?
Last year, back here with the Grizzlies.
So I want to talk about that year. I didn't know that. I thought the only reason you came back was your dad. I wasn't sure about that. So
mm-hmm.
Okay. So that team's folding. When do you find out about what's going on with your dad?
So I was about to go back to Germany again in August to a different team and called the Weißwasser Whitewater in the kind of by Dresden, the east part of Germany. So I go over there and I'm only there maybe a month and a half or so before I got a phone call from my mom, and she just, you know, said I need to talk to you about something. And kind of long story short, she said, you know, your father has cancer, you know, how bad? Well, really bad, you know, and stage 4 melanoma.
Yeah.
And from that point, I just talked to my GM in Whitewater, and they're really cool about just letting me go. And yeah, I caught the next plane out of there to come home and kind of just did that. And I still wanted to play because I needed to do something. And so that's when I jumped on with the Utah Grizzlies again, Tim Branham being the coach. And I don't know if they're affiliated at that time, but kind of just worked my way in with that, with the organization again. They've always been great to me.
Yeah.
And
did you reach out to them, or did they reach out to you? Like, do you remember?
I don't remember. I might have reached out to them.
I guess it doesn't really matter. I was just wondering because I thought it was such a cool move.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how it came about. I just remember all of a sudden, like, I'd heard about what was going on with your dad. And like I said, your dad is I don't know your image of his legacy here. And I don't know, it's different for you than it is for me, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he was just such a cool guy, and he's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, if I went into A-Court, I just made sure I found him, because, like I said, he was always there. He's always at work. He was always happy. He always had, and he would just tell you cool stories or whatever. But he was just such a huge supporter and friend of hockey here.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those, it just sucks when it happens to anybody.
Yeah.
But one of those guys that you just loved having around. And when I heard you were coming back to play here and be here during that thing, I was just like, man, that's what an opportunity. And the olive branch or whatever, that was like, it was just a cool thing for it to work out. So I was glad to hear that you got to come back.
Yeah.
So how was that for you?
Yeah, it was tough for sure. My parents were living in West Valley at the time, so after practices and stuff, I'd just jet over to my parents' house and be there and help where I could and stuff. And as his condition worsened, you know, I ended up just staying nights there with him in the front room, even though we had a game the next day or something. Just kind of hanging out, you know, spending as much time as I could. And it's kind of cool that last season with the Grizzlies, my whole career, I had the number like number 6 or number 13. That last year I changed it to 62, you know, his birth year.
Yeah.
Kind of cool to play with that on my back. And it was pretty special to do that. And actually I had one of my best seasons ever my last year with the Grizzlies. In January, my assistant coach came to me and said, you might get called up, you know, to the American League. You know, you had an incredible January, so, you know, just keep it up. You might get called up. And deep down, I didn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, that was months before my dad left us. But it was pretty cool because, I got interviewed by the Salt Lake Tribune, and they were just saying, you know, how have you managed to keep it together during this time and stuff? And I don't know. I think that's the cool thing about hockey. It's able to definitely ground you and keep your...
It's therapy.
It's therapy. Keep you focused and, definitely couldn't have done it without hockey. So
that's a cool thing about sports, and hockey is it's not unique in this way, but it seems like it's definitely more so. That team is your family, and you know, you go through stuff like this in your life, it seems like you get a lot of support from guys on the team and fans and stuff like that. So
yeah, the Grizzlies were awesome. They let me throw a big charity event there, one of the games, and was able to raise some money for my dad. And you know, they even donated like one of the Chuck and Pucks, you know, to help out. And no, they've been so super cool. I mean, if I could have had it my way, I would have loved to just play there for 10 seasons and just stick with it. But I know it's not always, doesn't work out that way. But I'm glad I was able to come back and play one final year there. And it just at that time, after losing my dad, and you know, I just recently got married that year too. So there's just a lot of pieces of the puzzle that kind of made me go, maybe I'll turn my attention elsewhere and start doing something different with my life. So it was a good transition.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm glad that the Grizzlies were supportive, and I'm glad you got to be here for a lot of people. Just have regrets, right? They were somewhere else, and they didn't get to be with their family for that last time. So I'm glad that worked out for you.
Yeah,
and I'm sorry for the loss, man. He's like I said, it was a loss for all of us. He was such an amazing person.
Thanks. Yeah, he was definitely good. Him and my mom both. My mom doesn't get enough credit because she's always behind the scenes doing everything. But with my dad, he, you know, worked for 17 years at the Acord, the practice facility for the Grizz, and, you know, always had that back door cracked for people that knew it, just to go back there, want to say hi, work the Grizzly room, took pride in his ice and the Zamboni and stuff. And he even worked here up at the Galvin Center just up the road. And if you ever go there, his face is plastered on the front of the Zamboni, and he's considered the Iceman. So
well, I had no
when
idea.
When you go there Christmas time, skating and outdoor, you know,
I'm gonna go
you'll
check
see
that
his
out.
Face on the front of Zam.
I'm gonna check that out for sure. We'll make sure that we post a picture of that on our Puck Report Facebook page too, so other people can see that. So DJ, you talked about switching focus. So what do you do now? What's going on with you now?
Yeah, so I went from what I thought was a hard job playing hockey to even a harder job, which is a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
So I have two little girls, 4 and 1.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're my life for sure. But yeah, they give me a run for my money. My 4-year-old's already smarter than I am. So.
Oh no. Yeah, I know the feeling. I had a daughter that was the same way. Started putting me in my place right away.
Yeah.
So, and your wife sells real estate?
Yeah, she's a real estate broker.
Nice.
Yeah, she kills it. She's been doing it since she was 18 years old. So. You know, kudos to her. She allows me to stay home and take care of the kids, and she's out there, you know, getting deals done, making more deals, strumming up business. So
constantly working, and you look bigger than ever.
Yeah,
in a really fit way.
Hopefully a fit way. I do finish off, you know, my daughter's mac and cheese once in a while. But.
Yeah, are they playing hockey yet?
No, they're not.
Is that in the plans? Do they have any interest in it?
I haven't totally introduced them to it. I was thinking about with my 4-year-old starting it, but right now they're total gymnastics, ballet. Oh. So I'm at a gymnastics studio often and dance studios often.
Yeah.
So a totally different ball game there, but I wouldn't mind strapping the skates on her and just kind of seeing what she, because the women's game is growing too.
Yeah.
That's really nice to see.
Yeah. Tons of, and there are, I mean, there's just as many scholarships for women as there are for men.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be like everybody's end goal, right? We want them to get a free ride to school because I didn't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
I couldn't pay for it. I'm a fireman.
Yeah.
So I don't make enough money to pay for 2 kids to go to school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, that's cool, man. And I just can't thank you enough for taking the time and coming in. It's funny when this podcast first came about and they're like, okay, who are you going to interview? And I'm like, well, I'm going to interview Trevor, and I'm going to interview DJ, and I'm going to interview, you know, like your name was at the top of the list.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm like, man, I just kind of wanted to save you because I knew you had some cool parts to your story. I didn't know how cool it would be, but I knew you had some cool parts to your story. And every week I'm like, I don't want to, That you're like my, you were my ace in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to use it yet. And then I was just looking at some posts and stuff the other day, and I'm like, man, I need to bring DJ's not DJ, he's gonna be another guy that I don't just want in once. Like, you've got more to your story, and we know you do. There's tons of fun stuff about Germany. I think it'd just be fun to bring like you and Evan in,
yeah,
and get more guys in here, and just I just want to hear all these European stories and
yeah,
learning to drive stick shifts. And
definitely have a lot of funny stories with Germany, and even in Oklahoma City, even with the Grizzlies, you know. So yeah. Much fun stuff that you could just kind of look back on and, oh, yeah, I got another one to tell you.
Yeah.
But
I want
to
hear them all.
I'd love to come in again and share some more.
Yeah, I want to hear them all. So, yeah, I guess that's it. We'll just have to bring you back and talk more about it and find out more what's going on. I love that you're a stay-at-home dad. I think that's awesome. That's that. Now that I look back, that would have been my dream job.
Yeah.
Because I've enjoyed raising my kids, and I'll – everybody says it and you don't realize it, but just enjoy it because it's over so fast.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're an empty nester. And
I definitely need my breaks too. My wife just let me go to Alaska with a friend of mine.
Fishing?
Fishing, yeah. Nice. Of course, fishing. So we brought back a bunch of salmon and halibut. And so I do get my breaks too.
You still play hockey?
You know, I'm still battling a little knee injury. So trying to get that. And it's all post-hockey stuff. It just takes time.
It does.
And so I've skated here and there, and but I haven't put on the skates in over a year now.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
Is your brother still playing?
Yeah, he still plays on the men's league team. I'm not even sure which team he's on right now. But
I'm not either. I haven't seen him for a while. So
I think it was the Western Doors or the Wings.
Oh, the Wings are my team. So I don't know.
Maybe he's on your team.
It could be. Maybe I just don't recognize him.
he's like me, but not as good.
Oh, there you go. I'm sure he's going to be happy that you said that.
No, he'd beat me in any type of arm wrestle or physicality, that's for sure.
What?
Yeah.
Is he as yoked as you right now?
Well, he just has like this brute young brother strength.
Oh, yeah.
He was always the player that kind of would muck it up. And I would just score and I would get the fame, you know.
Okay.
Over the intercom and stuff.
It's funny you mentioned that. I had just listened to an interview. It was 2 weeks ago on a different podcast, a Navy SEALs podcast. And the guy he was interviewing was talking about how he's a Navy SEAL and he's a jiu-jitsu master, and he goes over and he does all this stuff and more, and then he comes home and his little brother still just beats the crap out of him, even though he's not, like, his little brother's never done any military at all. He just knows how to beat up his older brother.
Yeah.
It's just a gift, I guess, you get as a sibling.
Me and Nick have we have a strong bond that way. We don't really beat up on each other anymore, but he's not one kid I'd want to pick on.
Yeah, no. Well, neither of you guys.
He's just a brute type kid, you know?
And yeah.
He could do some damage if he wants. I'd rather just stay on his good side.
Well, it's always been known in men's league that you don't pick on the Mannix, you don't pick on the Gelettos, as we used to call you.
Yeah, that works.
And then, there's just some brothers that you just don't pick on.
Yeah, one funny story, when we played men's league together, I was dancing through a bunch of guys, and I forget what team it was, but going past the last guy, he tried to lift my stick and missed and caught me in the face, and I started bleeding. I finished the play, ended up scoring, and then the guy, you know, come up to me and was kind of mouthing off to me, and I was bleeding everywhere, and out of left field, Nick comes and socks this guy right in the face, drops him.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like, whoa, what was that? So that's the type, you know, Nick is like,
yeah,
I'm going to stand up for my big bro, you know? And I was like, I'm not messing with Nick, you know? You picked with the wrong guy, man.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's what I remember of Nick too. All right. So if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, you want to hear more stories about Utah hockey players and what's going on in Utah, it's super simple. Just text the word puck to 57500. Just go to kslsports.com and look at podcasts. We have all kinds of cool sports podcasts right there. This one being the coolest one because it's about hockey.
That's right.
And that's it. DJ, thanks so much for coming
in. Hey, thanks guys for having me.
And that is the Utah Puck Report.